Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
Hey, good to see you again, Daniel. Looking forward to continuing our fascinating conversations. You know, we really run the gamut of all kinds of conversations. You know, we were talking about cultural issues, and now we're talking about denominational issues and more. By the way, the phrase run the gamut, I just got to Google this. It means to experience, display, or perform the complete range of something. So we are definitely running the gamut of these conversations with church planners.
Well, we are, right? I mean, even on this mini series that we're doing around church planning and the role of denominations, networks, and churches, I mean, that's what we're talking about right now. And if you haven't listened to episode 577, be sure to go back and listen to that first before we get into this conversation today. But talking about the whole gamut, the even number episodes, the ones that Todd and I are doing, we're doing a little mini series around systems for a post-COVID church. So nice. It's just a whole nother gamut of
gamut, another of, gamut. There's gamuts everywhere. So do you like pick cool things for Todd and more nerdy, heady things for me? You don't want to say.
Maybe you could put it that way. I don't know if I would have categorized it that way. But well, you know, you and Todd are very different.
To say the least. So, who's your favorite?
Well, of course it's you, Ed.
Thank you.
You know that.
That's because my Canadian wife. Todd doesn't have any Canadian connections. My Canadian children. So that's keeps you connected to your homeland. You know, yeah. All the monarchy's been in the news recently. So are you feeling a certain swelling of pride looking down at your dollar bills and saying, the Queen, God save the Queen?
Well, I made the mistake of talking too much about the relevancy around the Queen and the monarch as an opening illustration in one of my sermons.
Oh my.
And that was the last time I
So is that controversial in ever Canada?
Well, there are monarchists, right, within here, and there are people who love, I mean, it's just the whole everything around the crown, right? Just that Netflix series. I mean, there's on both sides of the Atlantic, there are people, it's just people are obsessed. So many people are obsessed, and I think are growing more obsessed with the crown and with the monarch. Whether or not they think it's relevant today, I think is aside the issue.
No, I want to know what you said and what happened. That's what I want to say.
That's not really the topic episode, right? Okay. All I did, to be honest, was I just pointed out the fact that Barbados announced that they were leaving the Commonwealth. Right, that they were leaving, that they didn't want the Queen to be their head of state anymore. And then I pulled up some research recently of that Canadians were pulled on whether or not they thought the monarch was relevant. So it was my mistake in just continually asking questions, because what I was basically doing was talking about the kingdom of God and talking about how most often in our context, we view the kingdom of God like we view the monarch.
Wow.
It's there, but we have no sense of tie. We don't know how relevant it is to it. We don't think about it on a day-to-day basis, but it's there. And then I unpacked why the kingdom of God has to be central to, I mean, it's the central message of Jesus, right?
Yeah, but that was a really Christians, bad I think, illustration. I would have complained about that illustration as well. So I totally get it. It's leave Barbados out of it. Leave your Canadian God save the Queen. Now, do you know the song in the U.S.? My country, 'tis of thee.
Yeah.
And you know what that song's based on, right?
Is it actually based on God Save the Queen?
Yeah, it's the same tune. I'm assuming it was put, now yeah. I'm going to look it up. I'm assuming it was put in there to kind of as a nudge towards that. So, but I'm looking it up right now because this we got to know. But for those who don't know, my country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, land that I love. And that's actually the same song that comes from God Save the Queen. It's America. It's an American patriot. I'm looking at Wikipedia because I can't put it on Wikipedia if they don't know, you know what, if it's not right. So
okay, that's actually huge because for some reason, yeah, I would always get it confused. And I'm like, wait, I thought that's the theme. I thought that's how the melody of God Save the Queen.
It is true. Actually, but fun fact, Samuel Francis Smith wrote the lyrics to American 1831 while a student at the Andover Theological Seminary. How fascinating is that? And so, but I'm trying to figure out if it was like to poke the, I mean, it must be, you know, how would you, I don't see it right now, but you would think they're all set. There's lots of things set to the same music, the prayer of the Russians and more, but let's just say that if it wasn't a poke, it was still an awesome poke. So my country tis of thee. So you can love your queen, sweet land of liberty, land that I love. Anyway, moving on from there.
Oh man. Okay. All right. So aside from the Oprah Winfrey interview of
which Meghan Markle, I didn't watch.
And all that was no.
Did
no,
you watch?
I didn't watch it either.
Did you
no,
watch? You didn't I didn't. Watch. But you're like the servile citizen of these people, shouldn't you? Like, well, I guess not them, but you're the queen. I mean, she's your, do you say she's your queen? Do you use that language, my queen?
No, I don't.
Why not? You're a Canadian.
I don't have any personal, I don't have personal attachment to her though.
Interesting, okay.
So, anyways, saying, I think I'm that's saying, maybe the dilemma.
Should. Maybe you should God the dilemma, save the queen is all I'm saying.
The dilemma and the relevancy of the
exactly.
crown.
Exactly. As you learned by me, okay. Never use a monarchy example in church again.
Oh, never.
You got to tell me that.
I learned
so
my
you gotta
lesson.
Be I know probably people in your church listen. So what did like people say? I mean, what was the follow-up? And then we'll get to the church planning questions. What would they?
No, okay. Okay. So we'll clear it up. People thought I was insinuating that I was against the crown and the monarch.
And so they were unhappy that you're against the crown.
Yes. And if you were to listen to the message again, I spent probably 1 minute too long on the example.
Yes.
Is
so you're sorry. You're repentant for that example.
Oh, completely. No. I mean, cause I, yeah, actually it was actually quite the interesting conversation.
Okay. So I just want to say that when I say things about the monarchy, nobody gets mad at me. Now, if I perhaps write articles about presidents in major publications, I get huge piles of mail. So, but again, I wouldn't have thought that the monarchy would be controversial in the great white north that is Canada.
Yes. Okay. So we are 7 minutes into this episode and we are wanting to talk about networks and church planting. All right. So, now, the reason we want to talk about this in particular is because you might be a church planner or you might be a potential church planner and are wondering, hey, what does kingdom collaboration look like? What does partnership look like? And there are plenty of networks that you might be like, okay, well, my friend over there is a church planner as part of that network and that one's a part of that denomination. That one's part of both a denomination and like three networks. So I guess this is the episode where we want to address why a church planter might consider partnering with a network in their church plant.
Yeah. And I think too, one of the things you threw in there that I think is sort of helpful is that people are then started being in denominations and networks. Now that was really, really big when planting missional churches came out. And so that was first edition, sort of if you listen to the podcast, you know that there's like a debate of whether it's the second or third edition, because there was a book called Planting New Churches in a Postmodern Age, the blue book that some of you have.
Yeah.
And then there was Planting Missional Churches, which the publisher calls the first edition. And though technically it was just a recreation, barely a change to the first, the blue book. And then that was orange. And then there was the third one, which you and I call the second one, or the B&H calls the second one, which is the one we did together. Daniel M is the first one that Daniel's on. So we might as well say, if you're on it, it's like the first edition. But in there, we wrote a lot about
networks. It was the nicest looking edition.
It was. It did have a nice feel to it. Here's what I would say. The early on, so what you found is, and the examples like ARC, which is Billy Hornsby was leading and you got Dino Rizzo now leading, and you know, think of Chris Hodges and think of Seacoast Church and I don't know that you use the term, but certainly in the spirit-filled space, they'd say life-giving, we might say charismatic, Pentecostalish. And so what happened is you had a significant overlap with the Assemblies of God and with the International Pentecostal Holiness Church, even Church of God. And for Evangelical Free or PCA and Southern Baptist, that significant overlap was with Acts 29, for example. And so, but what's happened over time is as these movements, like for example, Acts 29, sort of built its own identity more, you know, each, you know, the denomination and the network, each say, you know, we want you primarily to be connected to us. And so what happens is then, over time, someone could be loosely connected to a network and more solidly connected to a denomination, or vice versa, solidly connected to a network and loosely connected. And, you know, there's Steve Treichler up in Minneapolis. We joke all the time because I think he's a member of Converge. He's Southern Baptist. He's evangelical free. I think he's Acts 29. He's got his own network. And the joke became 10 years ago that it's kind of like a race car. And everyone sort of has, you know, if you watch racing, everyone's got these patches that they are. And I would say, you know, I was a little critical of that back then. And I love Steve Treichler, by the way. Love Steve Treichler. He's just trying to get church planting done in Minneapolis, and he's just happy to partner with everyone to make the world a gospel difference. So, but what I would say is organizationally, it doesn't make as much sense. If a network is going to put significant resources into a church plant, I think they have a right to expect and strategically should desire for those church plants to then become churches that start new churches inside the network. So I think what's happened is that there are still people are still connected loosely and they fellowship with others. But as denominations kind of resurged in, you know, from 2006 was the first edition of Planting Missional Churches to when we did it again in 2016, I think you saw denominations sort of resurge back. And networks, but networks still going strong. So you don't miss that. Networks are still going strong. Mm-hmm. So I think both of those things are and can simultaneously be true.
Yeah. In Planting Missional Churches, we included a new chapter on denominations and networks in there in the second edition.
It was an updated chapter because networks was in the first chapter. It's the first time that it was actually controversial at the time. So that's the only reason I remember it, because I listed, you know, back when I wrote the first edition, 2005, I guess, came out 2006, the idea of networks was controversial. I mean, you got to remember, you know, I ended up on the front page of I forget what it was, but several national publications with a motion to investigate me on the floor of the SBC. Because of my engagement with non-denominational networks. So that was controversial. So it's updated in the next edition.
Yeah. And then the image is fences and fires, right? The difference between fences and fires and how with networks, it's kind of like this fire that that planters and individuals have been attracted to. And I know over from my perspective, more as an observer, because rather than compared to you, I mean, you were on the board of Acts 29 as well, right?
Yeah, back in the day. At some point, at the beginning. Different life.
Yeah. But even when we think about it from that perspective, it was like, I remember early on in ministry, you know, seeing Acts 29 and seeing these networks and seeing these denominations and praying and discerning about church planting, and then seeing your, you know, reading your book, Planting New Churches in a Postmodern Age, just really from an, from an observational standpoint. And for me personally, I was like, man, that network is attractive to join because of the fellowship and the connection and the excitement that had, which I wasn't seeing necessarily within denominations.
Yeah, no question.
Would you say that's still true?
Yeah. I think it's less true. I think that what happens is all innovation happens on the periphery, and then good organizations move it to the center and rejuvenate themselves. So I think the reason there's a church multiplication network, and I was part of the formation of that. I was, you know, we had meetings. I was 2 days in Nashville. It was called MX9 at first. And you nice. Know, they were trying to ask, you know, why do church planters go to other places to find that camaraderie, that teamship? Mm. And they said, you know, can we become more like that? And so it created a network within the movement to do that. And what I would say is that does not mean that there's not a place and space for, I think the two biggest networks probably ARC and Acts 29. They're doing fine. Both of them are doing fine. But probably now more church planters, particularly for Acts 29, maybe less so with ARC, but now more church planters would see themselves, I'm that, rather than I'm three things or I'm two things, as they have sort of built their structures and systems, et cetera, et cetera. So I think ultimately, and here's where it gets tricky too. So, you know, X29 now has, you know, we have a partnership with them for theological education, but they have a school now, Grimke, that actually is, you know, much more connected. You know, they have other partnerships, you know, ours is one and other partnerships. But, you know, so you start asking questions. Well, what about education? What about global missions? And how do we, and what does a global mission board look like? What about health insurance? You know, where do churches get health insurance? And, you know, that's sort of changed in the last 10 years. The law changed so that all these organizations can sort of go direct now to evangelical organizations. So you don't have to just be Lutheran to participate in the Lutheran health plan. So, but I think so that the string, people listened to the last episode, the string has to grow. Because you need to hear this, because a movement generally can't just be church planting. Now, it can be primarily church planting, and then you got a church planting network. But over time, people start saying, well, what about widows and orphans? You know, what about theological education? Right. What about, you know, pension plan, whatever it may be? We don't use that term as much, but, you know, some sort of retirement, 403B, 401K, whatever. And that's American stuff right there. Sorry, I should have given Canadian examples, but
RRSPs.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. So over time, you end up more of a system. But you remember, I want to say this too. I'm an institutionalist. I think ultimately, how can I not be an institutionalist? I literally work at Wheaton College, which is, you know,
and you're tenured now.
Tenured, that's true. Tenured at an institution. I write for, you know, Christianity Today, which is in of itself an institution. I work for Lausanne, which is an institution. But I would just say that institutions tend to persevere. They need to be reminded of their mission. And when they are, they can be remarkably effective.
Yeah, you just got to add the monarchy.
The monarchy. Nice. Way to end it. Way to bring back to the monarchy. I like it. And I would just say that the monarchy seems very nice. And the Queen's Easter letter a few years ago was remarkably gospel rich. And I like to see. I remember actually reading and saying, that's probably the only thing I've ever read from the monarchy, the crown. But I will tell you, at the end of the day, my country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, land that I love. And I love
all right, all right.
Moving on from there.
Okay. So what we're going to do is at the start of next episode that we're together on, 581, we're going to be talking about the role of churches in church planting. But we're actually going to start it off with a little bit of a summary of, okay, you're about to plant a church. Should I join a denomination? Should I join a network? How do you even make that decision? And then we'll lead that into the role of multiplication that a church has. So thanks again for listening in, and we'll catch you next time.